Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode preparing you for National Vietnam War Veterans Day on March 29th. Every Vietnam veteran has a story, but it might not be too easy to tell that story. Almost every Vietnam veteran also has a connection to at least one of those 58,000 names etched in granite in Washington, D.C. And as we're about to hear, Gene Gio of Santa Cruz, California, is no exception. He served in the 8th of the 4th, the 8th Battalion, 4th Field Artillery in Vietnam. But let's go back to well before that. What was Santa Cruz like when you were growing up?
It's completely different than it is now. It was a more conservative type of town. I used to be able to take my shotgun, put it over my shoulder, ride on my bike down Seaside Street to Antonelli's Pond and shoot a limited dove after school.
After school?
After school, so you wouldn't be able to do that anymore now.
And you said you grew up in a fishing family?
My father's side of the family were fishermen. My mother's side were Brussels sprout ranchers up the coast.
So did you spend a lot of time out in Monterey Bay as a kid?
I did, both sport fishing and commercial fishing. Even before I did it, when I did it for commercially, I'd just go out on the boat with my father.
Any unique experiences out there on the boat?
A lot of unique ones, but, well, I guess I can tell you about the day that I decided not to be a fisherman. And we had been fishing squid all the whole time from May 12th when I got back from Vietnam until into October. And then we switched to anchovies. Behind the boat, we towed a barge that we put the fish in. The barge held anywhere, depending on how dry they were, up to 26 ton. Well, we were fishing anchovies on a 20 ton limit, and we come in, we unload, we're done, and I'm in the bottom of the barge cleaning it out, and my cousin leans over and asks me, how many ton do you think we had? And I say, I don't give a blank blank. We're only going to get paid for 20. He said, we got 16 and a half. I said, well, we got more than that. And he said, no, there was a hole in the hopper. They all went out. And I look over the side of the barge, and all of Moss Landing is covered with anchovies. And so my father was back on the boat. There were six of us instead of five. And so I just went to the helm, drove the boat, tied it up, got my oil skins, and walked off the boat. My father and my uncle were partners. My uncle goes, where are you going? I said, well, we got six guys. You only need five. So I'm taking a vacation that I was going to take when I got home from Vietnam and had to come out here. So that was my last day of fishing.
Well, tell me about, you know, before Vietnam, before you got drafted, I'm sure you had some plans for yourself. What kind of plans did you have?
I was going to college to be an engineer. I'd fish. I'd go to school 9 months a year on a deferment, but I'd have to make it through the summer where I'd go fishing, and I was pretty handsomely paid. So after my third year of college, I got drafted. And so I went to the owner of the cannery. I should tell him what happened, and this is really true. It was hard for in the summer months to get help. And so I had him write a letter to the draft board, please don't draft Eugene Gio, because if you do, the five on the boat and the 50 that work for the cannery are all going on unemployment. The lady at the draft board goes, you got away from me this year, but I'm going to get you next year. And so the next year came around, which was 69, and doing the same thing. I'm on the boat, and I'm going out the back door to buy some mag rims for my car. My mother says, hey, you got a letter from the draft board. Maybe you ought to read it before you go. And sure enough, I got drafted. And I had already appealed to Sacramento, San Francisco, and everything. So I knew I was gone.
You had 1 year of college left, and they said, sorry, you can't finish on it.
San Jose State. I didn't graduate in four, so I was going to take a fifth year.
Can you help us understand? Because, you know, today's young people, they're still registering with the Selective Service, but there's no draft. We haven't had a draft in a long time. How did that impact you emotionally to get that kind of news?
Well, see, all the friends of mine went in the service mostly directly out of high school. So they had been in and came back before I went in. So I had a lot of preparation from them, both mentally and being prepared what to do when you did get drafted. So I was pretty much prepared mentally for it. I knew it was inevitable.
Tell me how that unfolded from there. You get drafted, and then what?
So I go to basic training in Fort Lewis, and when I was in basic training, I guess they got a way of kind of spotting who has a little bit of, can do math or whatever, mm-hmm. and they were trying to get me to go to officer candidate school. But to do that, you had to sign up for an extra year, and I would not do that. So instead of that, luck would have it, like you say. Best plans of God are better than the plans of me.
Yeah.
I got sent to NCO school. So I was taking courses alongside. Well, first we went to AIT, and then I was taking courses with the same people that I had taken AIT with, but they were becoming officers, and I was going to NCO school. And then a couple other events happened. I did not graduate from NCO school, so I got held behind and taught fire direction control until I got just down to a year. And if you got less than a year, they wouldn't send you to Vietnam. They waited right till about the last day. I got my orders for Vietnam and went to Vietnam. As far as what happened, why I didn't graduate, me and five other people wrote a letter about a Major Brown. It was the last day and we had taken tactics courses, and these two second lieutenants said, well, if you want to write any in your evaluation critique of anybody you had. Yeah, well, Major Brown is terrible instructor. Major Brown does more harm than good. He's doing something about barbed wire around your neck. And so we were out training, I guess, the next week. This helicopter comes in and says, and calls out six of us, and we got to go back to base. And we're told, well, you guys haven't been in the Army 6 months. This guy's been in there 60 whatever years, you know, and you have no right to. So we didn't graduate. Instead of come out spec 5, we came out spec 4. Then I stood there, taught fire direction control till, like I say, right before we went to Vietnam. I guess it was like either the 28th or 29th of June 1970.
Well, and how'd you really feel about that? What did that mean to you, knowing that you were going to be sent over there?
I guess I didn't have that much feelings about it. I was pretty up for it and really ready for the challenge, not unlike a lot of other people that were scared of going and didn't want to spend 2 years of their life and take the chance of dying and the rest of it. So, and it was the same way the whole time I was there until a couple of events happened, and I knew that we weren't going to win that war.
Well, sounds like those are a couple of events that we need to hear about. Was there anything you need to share before that, or you want to dive right into that?
I get to Vietnam, and I've had all my friends tell me about this, and you don't volunteer for anything. So I kind of stood in the back. I was in fire direction control, and because they needed someone to go out to Charlie Battery that understood and could do fire direction control, because most of the people came off the guns. Mm-hmm. And so this guy, and he's Italian like me, Tony Scanelli, says, oh, yeah, come out here, you know. It's another, you don't have to worry about how you dress or anything, which is true. And and then they were pushing me back there that they needed someone up there and I'd be able to shoot the guns and all that. And so I went. And the very first Sunday that I was out at Charlie Battery, which is on Conti and Alpha 4, 1,500 meters from the DMZ, we come under rocket attack. Mm. And then mortar attack. And we had this, there was this ridge, and they're teaching me about it, and where they shoot at us, but it's about 5,000 meters away, and they're not very accurate. So we were up on top of the FDC bunker trying to see where they were coming from. And they walk rounds all around the battery, and a couple of people got killed that day. And we had no communications with the guns because all the wires were down. And we had where we thought we should be shooting. And so they needed people to go down to the gun to shoot it directly there versus doing it with communications. And I went running down to gun 4, and there's this other guy running back to gun 4 behind me. A rocket went off in between us. I got hit in the back. I thought I was dead. But instead of shrapnel, it was dirt clods. And then so after everything cooled down, we had a smart motor pool guy, and he realized that if a rocket comes in by sticking a stick down the hole, you can tell where it came from. Well, instead of come from over here, Rocket Ridge, it came from North Vietnam. And so while we were shooting that way, they were pounding us coming the other way. So that was the first incident that we had that changed my mind.
I can see how that would get your attention. And you said something there, you know, you got hit in the back and you thought you were getting killed. Did that like knock you off your feet? Is that what you're saying?
It knocked me forward. And the guy behind me, Dick Munn, he went the opposite way. He went backwards. Mm-hmm. So we were that close together.
So you pick yourself up, and from what it feels like, you expect to find all kinds of stuff in your back and bleeding and all that?
Yeah, but I reached back, and I was told by others after that there was nothing there. There was some dirt marks. And so I got down a gunfire. We fired off a couple of rounds. And like normally happens, you shoot a couple of rounds back, and they stop shooting at you because they go back down in their hole. And
so if I'm interpreting your comments correctly, it sounds like you're saying you didn't feel quite as invincible after that?
I didn't feel quite as invincible after that. But then from then on, then as things happen and we get encounters with the North Vietnamese or whoever was out there, we start picking up KIAs and that, and you think you're really winning that war. So then it was probably the first part of January they were going. There's going to be an operation called Lamsun 719 to intercept and do away with the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And so that was planned, and I knew something was up, but I didn't know what it was. And so all of a sudden, we're told we're going to Laos.
If you know your history, you probably know American ground forces were prohibited by law from crossing that border into Laos. But that doesn't mean that Jean Guillou and the rest of the men in the 8th of the 4th couldn't go right up to that border. That's exactly what they did, and there were consequences. It's time for our final break, but we'll hear the rest of his story when we come back. March 29th is National Vietnam War Veterans Day, so make sure to thank and honor the Vietnam vets in your life. And Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.